Easier.
There you go. It's recording.
All right. Hi, Paul Sackis. Good News Planet. I'm speaking to Jeff Haislip. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for asking.
So whose show is this? Is this your show, my show, or is both of our shows? We're both like in this business of making shows.
You know, if it's good, we'll both claim it. We'll both put it out in our platforms, and there you go. But, you know, that's the nature of the business. It's changed so much, and you can do that, you know. It's not just me doing your show, but this show now becomes a podcast, which becomes universally translated, which becomes then transcribed and becomes a blog. Then it's repurposed into 15 different things. I mean, that's what happens with these shows now.
It's a TV show, you know, get just a little smart TV. And we put it up on YouTube, and you go to the YouTube app, and we're on television. Yep. Look at that. We didn't have to buy a VHF or UHF channel.
Not anymore. In fact, then our stuff, what we do for C-Suite TV, it's, you know, then it's an Apple, Roku, Amazon, you know, Amazon Prime. And it also goes to United Airlines, to Aer Lingus, to, you know, you name it. We're putting it out everywhere. Hotel rooms, wherever we can find a screen, you can have TV, you know, and that's the nature of this business today.
And it's a good thing. It's a great thing because everybody to a certain degree is a producer now, can share thoughts that they have. And it's sort of like easy in, right? And you can go live. I mean, how about that live concept?
Well,
right?
We do that, you know, every day. I typically record my podcast, but now we're doing a taping of the podcast and broadcasting that to a live cast, to Facebook, to LinkedIn. And of course, now we have it captured on video, and we're dropping in lower third sidebars, just like you would do normal, regular, high production television. You know, now I've got, hell, I'm wearing makeup, I got lights, I'm wearing a jacket, I look good. You know, all those things, you know, are part of what we do today.
Well, you know, I like you, we're sort of early adapters, though, to this. I know we have 22 years in saying to ourselves, you know, I can't afford $300+ million to buy a channel, but I can spend, it was $70, I can buy a URL. And somebody said, you can make a magazine on here, you could sell products, you could do all these things. And I guess the story has come true, right?
And without question. In fact, when I first got in, started in broadcast, and I was doing my own show, of course, I was a judge on Celebrity Apprentice before, but then I went on to Bloomberg, did my own primetime show. Then I left there and started my own, what's called Over the Top Network. And, you know, it was not only bleeding, it was very bleeding edge. And I mean, bleeding edge by cash, meaning I spent a lot of money to try to do. And now what you can do today with a $100 mic, a simple webcam and a high speed connection, boom, you're in TV.
There it is. No satellite trucks.
Yeah, exactly. You can still do all that stuff. But, you know, that's going away and more as they figure out, you know, how to be able to to be able to get it to point A to point B, then it's over. I mean, then those trucks go away. You don't need that stuff. I mean, but there are still some valuable things you have to do.
Now, Jeff, you're a fascinating guy. And I know that ever since the day our mutual friend, Bonnie, right, Bruder? I think how we met, another television guru. In her own way, and a nice person. I was a big joy for me to meet you through her. I guess what I want to say is, you know, you've had an interesting career. Weren't you the chief marketing officer over there at Eastman Kodak for some time?
I was. Yeah, I bought and sold over 250 companies, worked in a lot of different companies in my career, billions of dollars here and there. And, you know, now I'm back to being an entrepreneur and, you know, cleaning my own toilet. So, I mean, that's what you do. When you're in business, I'm not done. You know, it's a lot of people say, what's the worst thing you've ever done in your career? I said, I don't know. I haven't done it yet, which means there's always something that's coming. I'm going to fail, you know, at some point with some things. That's okay. That's just part of the nature of getting to the good stuff.
When you were a little boy, I think, where'd you grow up? In the South, right? Somewhere?
No, I grew up in between Georgia and South Dakota, pretty much. Born in West Virginia. My dad was in the military, so we lived everywhere.
Aha. Uh-huh. So what do you think inspired this sort of, I mean, a lot of your career, I mean, Eastman Kodak, his film and blah, blah, blah. What do you think inspired you to go into communications, Elsa? Let's call it communications.
Well, with a face like this, it needs to be on TV, brother. I mean, that's the nature of the game. With a voice like this, it needs to be on radio. So you don't know. It just happened. You know, I've always been in sales. I've always been in marketing. The television and broadcast, you know, to be able to commentate, to speak, those things, they just all kind of came naturally, you know, through my career, whether, you know, I was like student body president or, you know, those kinds of things, you know, the student council in college, you know, all that stuff kind of added up. And then I got very involved in politics. And so, you know, that gave me a lot of chutzpah in terms of being able to be out there a lot. So, you know, that just, it just kind of grows on you. And then boom, you know, I joke about being eye candy for television. I never thought I would be on a primetime show doing my own stuff, but you know what the heck, why not? Somebody's got to do it.
Well, but you're also doing obviously what you love, but you're helping others in this process, because you have a lot of wisdom to share on the shows that you're working on, I will say.
Well, I think the most important thing is to give, and if you give, you get back. And that's the one thing I've learned in business and in life. The more of that we do, it's just better for all of us.
You know, your C-suite organization, let's talk a little bit about that, because they're I think the buzzword is give. The whole premise, from what I've seen, and I've gone to a bunch of your meetings, was, you know, the networking for life, helping each other and moving life forwards in a nicer way. How did that get started, and how does someone get involved with that?
Well, I mean, with the C-Suite Network, all you have to do is be a VP or higher of an organization. We'd love to have you be involved. You know, we have over 350,000 people and, you know, and millions listening and millions watching each and every month. So that's awesome. It's just a matter of just getting involved and wanting to do it. That we find the network is powerful. Our job isn't to make you the smartest person in the room. Our job is to make you the most strategic. And we do that through great content, great programs, great access to service, and then a network, you know, of trusted network of leaders. And that's what we try to do. So we vet everybody that comes in. Hey, are they the kind of people that we want, you know? And sometimes we get people in there that we go, uh-oh, that was the wrong person, or they came to a program and uh-oh, maybe they shouldn't come. I mean, one time we had I was telling this story earlier today, we had a psychic who signed up for one of our programs, you know, as president of her organization, and she's a psychic. And I said, guys, we can't have this person come to our program. This is for real business people. And so I said, you got to call and tell her she can't come. And they go, we can't do that. And I said, you can. And besides, she's a psychic. She already knows it's coming. So, you know, so you do that. But, you know, it's really about what I call the three R's. Are we relevant for each other inside the network? Yes. Okay. Then great. Then it's about increasing our reach. But, you know, you mentioned we know somebody mutual. That's how we met. That's the nature of how we really grow our businesses, is through that nurturing of those relationships. So it's about our reach, taking my reach, combining with your reach together, it's bigger. And then it really becomes about reciprocity. What can I do for you? And in doing something for you, you're going to do something for me. Maybe not this minute, maybe not now, but somewhere. And that's really what it's about, is about how we do that together.
How about the life of an entrepreneur? I mean, you know, there's corporations, you worked with them. I've worked CBS, PBS, you know, the company man, working our way up the ladder and so on, getting paid at the end of the week, and a lot of bonuses, some retirements things also. I mean, but an entrepreneurial way of life is really kind of a challenge. Would you say, or what do you
think? Yeah, no, it's a very lonely thing. One minute you're on top of the world, the next minute you think you're going to die. I mean, that's the nature of being an entrepreneur. You know, we go through three stages. We start as a one person band, you know, one woman, one man band. And then we move to devout followers, where we get all these people who join us and they drink the Kool-Aid and they'll do any job. You know, they just want to be a part of it. They're, you know, they're really caught up in drinking the Kool-Aid. And then it really moves to skilled practitioners. And that's a tough thing for a lot of entrepreneurs to do, is to move to where they're adding the kinds of people they need. And sometimes they can do that job, sometimes they can't. So you feast and famine, you know, cash wise, energy wise, relationships. So the real key for most executives and entrepreneurs is, how do you find balance? You know, balance with you know, balance with your work, balance with your family, your spiritual, your friends. You really need those four key components to be a real good human being.
Now you like the South Dakota kind of place.
I'm here right
now. I
think now.
You even say, you always say you live there because you can.
Is that exactly the line?
Yeah,
you should always live someplace because you can. And I think South Dakota is one of those places. I mean, you know, we got all this COVID stuff going on right now, but South Dakota has been practicing social distancing since 1889. So, you know, that's just the nature. There are more people in the stands at Indianapolis 500 the day of the race than our entire state of South Dakota. I mean, there's more cows in South Dakota than people, you know. There's more pigs in South Dakota than people, okay? You know, we produce 9% of the bacon in the United States. I mean, so that's primarily the reason why I live here, right there. If I could just get a scotch-producing distillery, wow, it would be nirvana. It would be nirvana. And you know, and the other thing is, Paul, listen, you put a quarter in, you get to go for the full ride with me, you know. So we got Mount Rushmore. Who else has a Mount Rushmore? No one. We have Crazy Horse. Who else has that? No one. We have the biggest B-1 bombers. We have the biggest gold mines in North Dakota. In South Dakota, we have we have more gold produced here than anywhere else in the United States. We have missiles. We have missiles on those B-2s, B-1s, B-52s. We used to even put them in the ground because we ran out of storage, you know? So we would be the most powerful country in the world.
Governor, let me ask you another question. You know, would you run for governor of South Dakota?
My wife wouldn't let me. There was a time in which I would have probably have done that. Now I'm kind of past that. Like, I'd rather write a check.
Okay.
Yeah.
All righty. You know, actually, we did a show out there in South Dakota at an Indian reservation.
Oh, which one? We got seven of them here in the state.
Well, I had somebody go out there. I was on the board of an organization, SeniorNet, one of the first evolved out of IBM. We taught seniors how to use computers, okay?
Oh, wow.
And we had an outreach towards the Native American Indians. And one of the reservations was one of the locations that we were giving equipment to and teaching it. And I sent somebody out there. I remember the camera guy, I didn't go. I remember the camera person saying, I have never been in a more beautiful place in my whole life.
Yeah.
And he said, the sky is just mind boggling. He was in awe. I guess, is that evolved from the cleanliness, do you think, that with not so much industry?
We don't have any smog. I mean, we don't have anything like that, but it's a little bit of the, you know, the prairie and the way it operates and the rejuvenation from the earth and everything else is a big part of that. I mean, first of all, the state is absolutely stunning. I think it's a very spiritual place, you know, right where I live on a river right here in the eastern part. I grew up in the western part, and most of the Indian reservations are out toward the west. I'm sure he probably went to Rosebud or to Pine
Ridge. Rosebud.
So, and Rosebud, by the way, was the former Spotted Tail Agency, Sintigaleska, which is the Sioux or Lakota name for Spotted Tail. And of course, he was a great chief, unbelievable chief, a wonderful leader of his people. So it was renamed Rosebud many years ago. But yeah, you know, when it's 20, 30 to below or 60 to 80 below wind chill factor, it pretty much cleans up things around here, you know? So, you know, we don't have issues like homelessness and others. I mean, we do have some of that, but not like you see in other cities. I mean, it's just so freaking cold. And then right now it's so freaking hot. So it's a little bit of both. We have two seasons, hot and cold. That's it. But you know, it's always sunny. In fact, South Dakota is known to have more consecutive days of sunshine than any other state in the union. Used to be called the Sunshine State until Florida got really ticked off at it. So we said, okay, you can have that because we have Mount Rushmore. We'll become the Mount Rushmore State. So take
there
that.
You
funky, goofy, Disney Mickey Mouse people. not that we're holding a grudge. Not holding
Don't hold back. Don't hold back, Jeff. I mean, as long as I know you, don't hold back. What was the book you wrote?
I've written four now. I've written the Mirror Test was the first one. The second one was Running the Gauntlet. Third was Think Big, Act Bigger. And most recently is the Hero Club. You know, how to build hero cultures and for your employees. So.
On a little do that. So how do you do that? How do you make a hero in your, you know, everybody's talking heroes now, right? With
Well, I mean, nobody wants to be a hero. I mean, no one starts out to be a hero, but you want to work in a hero company. And so there's certain things that you put forth in terms of values, and those companies that do that become real hero companies. And that's a very big deal. And so we put together a chart to be able to describe the kinds of companies that are out there, do-gooders, bottom liners, even asshat companies, you know, wannabes, a good co. And then, of course, way off into the chart of the spectrum is this, you know, hero company. And hero company, listen, that's the kind of company you see in every community that has great values and that puts people above profits. They make sure that the Little League is funded. They make sure the symphony is funded. They make sure that they're doing, you know, clean practices in their business so they're not discharging things. They're taking care of the environment. They have good relationships with their vendors. And as a result, they gross more money than anyone else. They net more than anyone else in their industry or sector. They have happier employees, customers who are more engaged, and vendors who want to do business with them. And when they walk through the community, everybody goes, there goes a hero business, you know? And that's really what we helped companies to do in the C-suite network and with the Hero Club. And that's what the Hero Factor was all about, was to describe that particular factor and the factors that go into making a hero company, like diversity and inclusion, you know, picking sides, taking stands, having real values, you know, and then asking themselves some tough questions. And that's not an easy thing to do. I mean, we've, you know, we're going through this horrific, horrific economic, you know, downturn along driven by this pandemic. And then we're all facing some of the most horrific and blatant racism that we've ever seen. It's been there for years. We're just finally, you know, filming it, which has been unique. And as a result, now it's time to really, you know, stand up and be counted. And that's what businesses need to do right now.
Do you think the name boss is over? Someone's are your boss, you know, that whole
no,
fear.
No.
It's still around. We'll be around.
People call me boss. I mean, no, I think they're, you know, you got a boss. You know, my wife's a boss. What are you kidding me? You know, you know, I think that the thing is, look, we got to understand that, you know, terms, words, things like that, they don't mean anything. It's the actions we put with them. Okay. So you can be a boss and be the greatest boss in the world. There's nothing wrong with that. Just don't be that kind of boss, right? Don't be that kind of leader. Don't be that kind of person. And that's what we care. You can call somebody, quite frankly, I'll say this, you can call somebody the N-word and be affectionate. If that's okay for you to be able to pull that off and do that. I don't think I would use it because it's not my vocabulary and it's not in the kind of manner of which I'm accustomed to. So it's inappropriate, right? But if it's appropriate for you and somebody else wants to use it in a rap song, somebody else wants to use it the way they want to use it and it's good for them and the way that they do it and it's meant in a good way, you know, then by gosh, let them do it. Who am I to say? It's a free country. And so, yeah, I think some things are appropriate, some things aren't. But it's all, you know, my job isn't to convince you every day that you need to be this or do this. It's just to have an understanding. If we have an understanding, that's a great thing.
You're one smart guy, Jeff. I really, in a humanly minded way, you in a due respect to your fellow man and woman. That's a beautiful thing. I've always enjoyed my opportunity to get to talk to you.
I appreciate that. I just want to be treated a certain way myself. And, you know, and that gets me into trouble. I mean, I've been close to being arrested numerous times or you know, coming to fisticuffs many times. In some cases, I've been in those where I've seen someone do wrong and I've stepped in. Or I am being wronged and I will not back down from it. And so I feel for a lot of people who are been much, much worse situations than I, that are in different situations because of the color of their skin, their economic condition, their sexual preference, whatever. Who wants to go through life living like that? That's bullshit. And I wouldn't like it. I don't think any human would. And I think of anything, we as, you know, most white people, you know, and by the way, some white people say you don't see color. Are you kidding me? Of course we see color. You know, I see you're white, I'm white. Okay. But when I see a black man, he's black. Okay. Say he's black. He's black. Okay. Big deal. That's it. But let's understand each other, right? And let's not run from that. Let's have open discussions. And I don't think anybody, you know, and I said, I think all this stuff has opened us up. I think most white people have never had the understanding of how tough it's been to be a black person in this country. And there are a lot of people who say that, oh, Jeff, you're being overdramatic. Nope. My family wasn't brought. My family came here in 1757 from Ireland, and others came here in 1651 from Africa. And I'll guarantee you, we did not live the same life, and we didn't have the same experience, and we didn't come up the same way. And so who am I to say? And so I want to have a better understanding of that. I mean, I talked to an FBI agent. Sorry, Paul. I talked to an FBI agent the other day who's now in business, head of security for a bank. He's an FBI agent for 28 years. And I asked him, I said, how many times have you been pulled over? He said, too many times to tell you. Are you nuts? That's nuts. All because of the color of his skin. Had nothing to do with his car or whatever. Who cares? I'm sorry, man. There's something wrong with that. Now, I don't know that. That's like, whoa, are you kidding me? You know? And to me, that's a learning, and I just want to understand that stuff.
You know, I'm just going to throw 2 cents in on this subject, okay? Just because my buddy, Tommy Ullman, is not with us anymore, but he was the district attorney in New Haven. And he defended, you know, many African-American, many black men, okay? And one of the things that he taught me was, in essence, unfortunately, because of the dark skin, was a mistaken identity. Yeah. And because in an evening, you know, I this is just a fact. You can see a whiter guy easier than you can see an African black skin, right? And so many of an arrest has occurred because of our inability to recognize somebody, right? I think that's happened a lot.
If blacks make up 13% of the population in North America, okay, roughly, I think that's the number, then you would think that they would only make up 13% of our jails. Let's just say it's double that, right? But that's not the case. It's like 80, 90%, you know? So something's not wrong. Something's not right, I mean, with this. There's something not right. It just doesn't add up. Doesn't add up. Just like it doesn't add up that women, 51% of the total population, only 17% of corporate boards. That's bullshit. You know, there's little things like that. That's just not right. We have to find qualified people. Well, if you don't know of enough qualified people, get off your butt and make it happen. If that's your job. And we should be measured for it, and we should be held accountable for it. That's the stuff we should do. And by the way, I'm going to screw that up. I'm going to make mistakes, but I'm going to at least own it. You know, I'm going to call it. And I just think people should live like that.
Jeff Hazlitz calls it as he sees it. The bottom line stuff. Three last quick questions. What's good? What would be good news for you?
That I get the call that I'm expecting any minute now. That would be good news. I can't tell you what, but it's life changing. So I hope I get that call.
You got okay. Then what's love for you? What's love for Jeff Hazlitz?
My family, and especially my grandbabies, and having more grandbabies when my daughter finally gets married.
Last question. What's peace? What's peace for Jeff?
Peace is sitting on a tractor or on my deck in South Dakota, watching the river, having a glass of scotch, and my wife next to me. That's you know, she's not next to me on the tractor, but I do like my tractor time. I like my man time. I like my cave time. I enjoy that like crazy. I put my headsets on, listen to country music, just drive and cut grass and haul logs and do man stuff. Okay. It's okay. I can do man stuff because I'm a man. And then having that time just sitting there and relaxing. That's peace.
All right, Jeff. I couldn't appreciate it anymore. Thank you so much, my friend.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay.